So let's talk then about the living wage, because you're right, they are linked. We've talked about people at the top now. Sinn Féin unable to tell us this morning what the cap would be, how much it would be, whether it would be a multiple or a hard figure. What you've said is you would look at it. You say in your manifesto that you would seek progressive realisation of the living wage. What does that actually mean? Would you legislate to make it compulsory across the public
sector? We would like to see a statutory living wage. We want to get the power to set our own minimum wage, and we would want to see the statutory living wage of £7.20. We know, for example, that approximately 170,000 workers do not get paid the living wage. Now,
how much is the living wage?
£7.20. And to bring that up from £6.50 to £7.20 would cost us £220 million. But that, we know...
In the public sector?
In the PwC. PwC's figures for this show that consumption would improve by £130 million would improve. That's going into our local businesses. Now, on top of that, we know the increased tax take and reduced tax credits and benefits would be £88 million.
We don't get the tax take here in Northern Ireland. It goes back to Westminster.
Not yet, we don't.
It goes back into the Exchequer.
But not yet, we don't. But this would all be part of negotiations.
So what about a small business? I was asking this very question of a politician across the water, I can't remember which party, last week, for Five Live. And a couple of small businesses phoned in and said, tell you what, you put the living wage up to that, you'll put us out of business. So let's think of a small business listening to you this morning, and, you know, they're getting it tight and they're just about covering overheads. You would force them to increase their costs.
We're very, very clear here, Stephen. That £220 million figure, that's the gross wages overall of the wage bill, the local wage bill would take, that represents a 1% increase. Now, many of the companies and many of the institutions that these people would be working for can well afford a 1% increase in their wage bill to be able to pay this.
Do you ever run a business?
Because we know that.
Have you run a business?
We're talking here about a 1% increase. How do we know they can't afford it? It's the exact same question. To be able to have a progressive tax system, to be able to grow our economy, we need to be able to do these progressive measures. And a living wage, like we're talking here about lifting people out of poverty.
You don't think there are businesses, small, medium-sized businesses, who may indeed support Sinn Féin, who are getting it really tight, and a couple of quid makes all the difference from them keeping the lights on, Chris.
But this living wage is not in isolation. This is in tandem with our policy decisions around the business rates.
Chris, you don't even know how much the living wage is.
The living wage is £7.20.
It's not. £7.85.
Well, £7.85. There's a 50p difference. £7.20, certainly from the figures I've seen.
Per hour.
We're talking here about a 1% increase.
You're nearly 10% out, Chris.
We're talking about a 1% increase.
But you were nearly 10% out.
Well, the living
it's about economic credibility, isn't it? You're arguing for something you don't know how much it is, and you're telling small business they can afford it, and you don't know how much it is.
The PwC figures that I'm working off say the living wage is £7.20.
Do they? We'll look it up now.
No, yeah.
So PwC have got it wrong, is your charge?
In my figures.
We'll look it up.
But this is linked, and you're saying here our SMEs can't afford this. This is linked, and this is where one of our policy is a business-friendly review of rates reliefs. Now, we have a system here, and when you take rates, for example, where if you have an empty property, you're rewarded with rates relief. And we have said that we should have a situation where if a small business moves into an empty property, well, then in that case, could have rates.
Listen, to be fair to you, because we were quoting the Living Wage Foundation, right?
Yeah.
So to be fair to you, just in case you're right and I'm wrong and I need to apologise, we'll go back and we'll check.
Well, look, there could be a 50p difference or whatever it may be, but it's the figures I have, £7.20.
Let's stay on fiscal independence and the blueprint, because you want Stormont to take full control over income tax, national insurance, corporation tax, capital gains tax, borrowing powers, and the setting of the minimum wage, right? And you also say within your manifesto that you would vary that in order to pay the bills in Northern Ireland, basically. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what you say, right? So, again, let's establish if this is thought through. Income tax. So imagine that you had the power that you want on income tax. Would you put the top rate up or down?
We would implement a new 50% tax rate for those earning more than £150,000.
Okay, that's a clear answer. Thank you. What about the 40% tax rate currently for mid-income workers? But up or down?
Again, what I'm saying here is we would implement a new 50% tax rate for those paid. We're very, very clear in our manifesto.
Sure.
Income tax at the minute, there's a take of £2.5 billion. We know by introducing this new rate, you would generate an additional £28 million. Now, whenever it comes, we've just talked about, you know, we'd be able to put that straight in to be able to help in SMEs, maybe tackle utility costs, for example. And this is why it's all linked in together.
Would you lower the income tax rate for low-income workers?
again, from looking at our manifesto, when you have our manifesto in front of you, I think we are very, very clear here. We would implement a new 50% rate for those paid over £150,000.
Yeah, but that wasn't the question, was it? Because your party claims to represent hard-working people, including low-income workers, working-class people. Would you not seek to lower their tax? Would you not reduce their tax? No. Why is that not a policy?
We're talking here about building a progressive tax system.
Yeah.
And we're very, very clear. When it comes to income tax, the first thing we would look to do is implement a new 50% tax rate for those paid over £150,000. Now, when we look at the suite of fiscal measures that you're talking about, if down the road we need to look at it, we may need to look at it down the take, whenever, if tax takes vary, if economic situation changes.
Another thing you'd look at.
Progressive. No, and Stephen, I'm laying out here very clear. No other party has laid out here. Some of these parties have asked for powers. I'm laying out here very clear. We would implement a 50% tax rate for those earning over £150,000. I'm very, very, very clear on that.
Okay. What about capital gains tax? Will you put it up or down?
Again, we need to, it's a suite of measures. And if you look at what we've said, in some instances we've been very specific of what we would like to do.
That's not a difficult question, is it? With capital gains tax, would you put it up or down?
It depends on how the other measures. We need to look at the entire suite of measures. If we look at national insurance contributions, we've said we would increase.
But you want the power to vary capital gains tax. It's in your manifesto. So presumably if you want the power to vary it, you've got an idea what you would do with that power. Would you put capital gains tax up or down?
But Stephen, it's all linked in together. We've talked about the fiscal... For example, one of the headline stuff recently has been on corporation tax.
You're not going to answer that.
Let me get to the point. We have time here to discuss these things.
We certainly do.
If we look at corporation tax, if we look at income tax, we need to be able to build the relative measures. If we're saying here about income tax and corporation tax, it all depends on each other. It's about building an overall progressive system.
Which is
system.
Why I'm trying to get the picture from you of what you would do with this power, whether it's thought through or not. Now, you've given me a really clear answer. For those people earning over 150 grand, you'd put their tax back up to 50%. That's what Labour would do too. Okay? Capital gains tax, you don't know. That's clear. National insurance, what would you do with it? Would you put it up or down? Because national insurance hits a lot of wage packets.
Yeah, and again,
would you seek to reduce it?
Very, very clear here. We increase the upper rate of national insurance contributions on income over $42,300 by 2%.
That's hitting quite a lot of people, isn't it?
This is going to generate an additional £44 million for our local economy. Mm. Again, this is all part of that progressive taxation system, built in with income tax, built in with setting the living wage. These are all the types of things that we'll do. Now, as we progress, as we go through years, some of these taxes will change, but it's about building a progressive society.
You see,
because this is important, Stephen. We have a real problem with low-wage economy. We have a real problem with in-work poverty in this island. We need to be able to tackle that. And as I said earlier on, the Sunday Times come out with their rich list last week. There are more billionaires now in Britain than there was before the recession started. That's wrong. We need to lift people out of poverty. The only way to do that is a progressive tax system.
Your slogan in this election, vote Sinn Féin, make yourself poorer, is hardly what you would agree with. But you want the Assembly to break away from London financially, as we've been talking about. And that would make Northern Ireland poorer, wouldn't it? Because official figures for public spending here show that we're nearly $10 billion a year better off. We get more than the taxes we pay. That's what we get.
£10 billion more. I would challenge that. The latest figures from the British Treasury, and we'll take the British Treasury at the word, the latest figures is that public expenditure here for the North is anywhere between 17.7 to 18.9 billion. We generate, according to DFP, we generate anywhere between 14 and 15 billion. So the fiscal gap there is only 2 or 3 billion, 3 or 4 billion. It's not the 10 billion that's out. That figure is
even
often
if it
taken.
Is. Even if it is.
But it's a big
billion.
Even.
It's a lot of money.
But that's a big even. You know, we're talking there about 50p. You know, this
enough.
Is a lot of money.
Okay. And if you're right and it is 3 or 4 billion, why are you giving that away?
But
if we're 3 or 4 billion better off, why give that away?
But we're not giving it away. If you take the Smith Commission with Scotland, they're saying, the British government will try and charge us for a lot of these powers that are devolved. But the Smith Commission in Scotland have been very, very clear in this. You know, the financial benefits have to stay with the devolved economy. Yeah, but, and that's what's very, very important here.
But it is a black hole. If I take your figures, £3 or £4 billion, right? £3 or £4 billion of a black hole from where we are now. £3 or £4 billion, not million, billion, worse off than we are now. How is Sinn Féin going to fill that black hole?
I've just outlined some of it. It's about growing our economy.
But so add it up for me. Help me get to the £3 billion.
But if we have to grow our economy, we need to be in control of it. We have to be in control of it. You know, right back to the 1950s, international economists have been saying. International economists have been saying that economic growth here is unbalanced, it's unstable, and it's unfair. We need these powers in our own hands to be able to do it.
It's a hell of a gamble.
It's not a gamble. This is our money as well. We generate, I've just given you the figure, we've generated 14 or 15 billion, and that doesn't include income tax, national insurance contribution, VAT, or corporation tax generated locally but paid in London. So, you know, we pay our way here. This is our money. We are just as entitled to ask for how we spend our money in local schools or hospitals as dictated to us that it's going to be spent on submarines in the RAC.
So you don't think there's any gap between what we raise and what we spend?
I'm denying there's a gap. I'm not saying I'm denying there's a gap. I'm denying that it's the 10 billion. I'm saying that it's far, far closer. And remember, look at national debt in Britain. Every country runs at a fiscal deficit. Okay. It's good financial management.
Let's come back into the manifesto. All of these little things where I'm lying in bed last night and I think, I must ask about that. I don't really understand it. So maybe it's me. Your manifesto says, wait for this one, you would develop air corridors across a network of airports to improve worldwide connectivity for business on the island. What is an air corridor?
It's very, very simple. This is about developing what we have. Ireland is the gateway into Europe. But we have a situation here with partition that very often you don't have the same access in Belfast and Dublin into Europe as you may do elsewhere.
But what is an air corridor?
It's about the passenger, it's about the flight routes, it's about building the transport system from Ireland into Europe. It's about using it, because there's so many, if you go to North America, and you're there all the time, Stephen, if you go to North America, they see Ireland as a gateway to Europe.
I can fly to North America from Dublin. Do you not want us to do that?
I'm not saying we do. That's what I'm saying. It's about expanding that. It's about expanding the number of routes out of Dublin and Belfast. It's about building upon what we have.
So you would want Belfast to compete with Dublin, would you? Who would you prefer?
Of course, we need to see both airports. We need to see all our
to the detriment of Dublin?
Well, it doesn't have to be to the detriment. It's about expanding.
Well, it'd be competition, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. It's about working in conjunction. And this is another big problem. For too long we've had, when things go well in Uri, things are bad in Dundalk. When things go well in Dundalk, things are bad in Uri. This is one of the reasons why we need to get rid of partition.
So
we need to get rid of the duplication.
So developing air corridors basically means putting on more flights. Is that what that means?
It's developing the
air corridors.
It's developing the best way. But it's more than just flights.
But just help me understand what an air corridor is. Is that putting on more flights in kind of language I can understand?
It's about easier routes. It's about trade. It's about people. Okay. It's about flights.
Well, how would you do that? Incentivise the big multi-million pound airlines? Give them more money to put those routes on? How would you do it?
Not necessarily. Again, it comes down. If you look, you know, in recent years, we've been able through foreign direct investment to attract 800 new companies, bringing 75,000 jobs.
But you're going to cap lots of wages for foreign direct investors that might want to come in here.
No, we're going to say they should
pay the high flyers.
No, we'll say they should pay the living wage.
No, but you're going to cap their wages for the people at the top, so they're not going to come anywhere near the country, are they?
That's not what we're saying. We said we're going to require them to pay the living wage.
No, but it is what you're saying, because we talked about this at the start. You're going to cap high wages in the public sector, so they're not going to come anywhere near it. But we've been through that. Okay, so how would you pay for these air corridors? Who would pay for it?
Why does there have to be a cost?
There's no cost.
Why does there have to be a cost to develop air corridors? When we develop efficiencies and better ways of doing things, there's not always a cost.
But these airlines aren't doing it now. So in the free market that we have, they're not putting on these extra air corridors that you want. So you would have to incentivise them, surely. Or why would they do it?
But it's about making our economy more attractive. It's about making what we do more attractive. And Sinn Féin are very clear in this. We believe that an all-Ireland economy is far more attractive proposition for these people who want to come here. It's about using our high skill base, our young people who are very, very highly skilled. We have what it takes to do this. It doesn't necessarily always have to bring a cost.
So you're going to pay off people's credit cards, you're going to pay off people's mortgages, and you're going to, I don't know, open new air routes.
Look, Stephen, we can be flippant about this, or we can look what we're saying. Our manifesto stands very strongly about equality, not austerity. For too long, the big banks have got support. All we're saying is it's low-paid families who need support. That's what we need to do.
You would open your own bank, wouldn't you? It's in there too.
We've talked about the need, and it's not just the need to, for borrowing powers, because we have the crazy situation where some of our local councils can borrow money from the European Investment Bank, but the Assembly can't. So I think there's something need to look at that.
Is that a Northern Bank?
A state-owned bank. We have the need for a state-owned bank because we need to be able to provide for our people.
And what difference would the state-owned bank be to the banks we currently have?
Well, it's very, very simply. It would have the interest of the community best placed. This would be a state-owned bank run in the interest that would be in tandem with the local government and indeed with the needs of the local people.
And it would offer lower interest rates than the other banks or what?
We would have far better rates for local people. And again, it comes down...
Really?
Because we're talking there about SMEs. You're talking about SMEs. We need to be able to give the SMEs power. And one of the big things that our SMEs send about credit, about getting capital, this is what we need to be able to do.
So this bank that Sinn Féin would open up, or help the open up, would have lower interest rates for local people. How much would that cost? Wow. That's a hell of a promise.
No, this bank would be set up in the interest of local people's needs.
But we give lower rates, you just said, to local people.
But sure, we see...
Well, lower mortgage rates?
They wouldn't
have a mortgage because you'd clear it for them.
But we see with credit unions. We see what credit unions are able to do for the people. And that the credit union is owned by its members. We're simply saying that if we look at the failure of the banking system throughout, not just throughout Ireland, but throughout the Western world, we see that the need to have banks that work in the interests of those people.
And who's classed with this bank that we would set up? Who's classed as a local person? Someone living here? Could you move over from England to get your lower interest rate?
I'm talking here about a state-owned bank that serves the local economy.
Who's classed as a local person, though? You'd need an address here and that's it.
Well, a local business, you know, we use these terms all the time. We describe local SMEs, a local business. A business is operating in the interest of local people.
So do you have to run a business to get it, or is it for ordinary Joe Blow people as well?
No, this would be a state-owned bank. The creation of a state-owned bank in the interest of the people. So again, it would be for the people and for local business.
Okay. Welfare reform. How are we doing with that?
Well, Sinn Féin have blocked welfare reform. As I said, it's the only part of these islands where the worst excesses of Tory austerity has not been felt when it comes to welfare. We've been very, very clear on that. And we talked about it earlier. Despite various votes in Westminster, the bedroom tax will not be applying to the North. And we're very, very clear on that.
Let's remind ourselves of the promise that Gerry Adams gave to the people of this country.
We're very, very clear. No one will have any benefit reduced which is under the authority of the Assembly here or of the Executive. And that was our key point on this issue.
Is that still a promise? Because the DUP says it's undeliverable.
It's our promise. This is very much a red line for Sinn Féin.
No one welfare, will be worse off. No
welfare
one.
Is a red line for Sinn Féin. We've talked about equality here. We've talked about fairness here today. Absolutely no way will be looked to make savings on the back of the vulnerable. And Sinn Féin have been very, very clear. This is why we come out and said, Mervyn Storey, the minister in the House, said, nobody going forward will be affected. We entered these negotiations with the DUP in good faith. Whenever we seen the schemes and it became
He then made it clear he was talking about just one part of the reforms, not all of them.
Oh, so afterwards he makes it clear.
Yeah.
We entered these negotiations in good faith. We were very, very clear. Children with disabilities, adults with severe disabilities, large families and a long-term sick, we want to see protections and we will not allow it to be any other way. That is a red line issue for Sinn Féin and I'm being very, very clear on that.
Okay, and I can see that you've been very, very clear on that, but you just mentioned children with disabilities and other categories of vulnerable people. I get that. But Gerry Adams' promise goes well beyond that. He says no one will be worse off. Is that still Sinn Féin's policy, that not one individual citizen in this country will ever be worse off?
For those people under the control of what the local executive have control of, nobody will be worse off going forward. We have made that very, very clear.
And how much would that cost us to pay? How much would that cost for us to... The difference between what the Tories want to change, what welfare reform is implementing, and for us to have that subvention. How much is that costing?
Well, with respect, we're in negotiations currently. Negotiations are ongoing. I think it would be wrong to start negotiating over the air about what sort of costs are attached to this. But Sinn Féin are very, very clear.
That's not a negotiation. If you were to reveal the costs, it's not a negotiation. It's telling us Well, it's letting us form a view as to whether we think it's realistic or not, because the DUP is saying it's not realistic. We can't afford it.
We can afford it. We've just talked about, this is about choices, Stephen. If the British government can afford warfare, they can afford welfare. And this is all about choices. And Sinn Féin made it very, very clear. A society is measured on how it treats its needy. Sinn Féin will not be found wanting in this regard. This is a red line issue for the party. Our manifesto embeds equality. It's not about austerity. We need to do what's right by the people who need us in society, and we're determined to do that.
By the way, the South Eastern Health Trust are taking great exception to what you've said this morning. They've contacted us. When you talked about executive pay in the trust, they're asking you to retract your comments. They say your comments are inaccurate about the level of pay. They say that you talked about at least 10 directors on this level of pay. They say they only have 8, so you couldn't be right.
I think the South Eastern Trust, the figures are published. If anybody wants to look at the figures for remuneration that the South Eastern Trust pay, I would invite them to go onto the website and to look.
Well, if you got it wrong, you'll retract it. We'll have a look at it and we'll see if we can get some detail. And we'll ask the South Eastern Trust for the detail right now so that we can clear that up. But you've got the DUP saying we can't afford this protection within the welfare system. That you are promising, and Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams publicly promising the public. So that's an impasse.
And that's what we continue to work through it. A lot of these issues are very, very complex issues. Our negotiation team are on standby. We want to get into these negotiations.
But you're not prepared to negotiate. Your red line is no one will be worse off. So where's the wiggle room to negotiate?
Negotiating for the money to be able to protect these people. We're very, very clear here. And I've just said there now, there's always money. And I go back to this point. There's always money for warfare. There's never money for welfare.
You see, Chris,
and this is very, very important.
I'm not trying to be funny.
And this
here.
Is why, like, and this is, for example, we have talked here today about a living wage. We've talked about a progressive tax system. It's about taking people out of poverty. If we reduce tax credit and benefits needed, that will have an overall impact on the welfare system. This will free up money for the welfare system.
But if you are conceding, which is what you're clearly saying, that you're in the middle of a negotiation, how, if you're in the middle of a negotiation, can you already make a guarantee that no one will be worse off? Because you don't know what you've achieved yet in your negotiation, and yet you're making this big promise. You wouldn't be electioneering, would you?
Absolutely not. We've said for months. We've said for a long, long time now. These are red line issues.
You don't know if you can deliver it. You don't know if you can afford it. You haven't got the money yet.
This is what we are negotiating. This is what we are going
through. And you haven't got it yet.
These are red line issues for Sinn Féin.
And if you don't get the money, what will you do?
These are red line issues for Sinn Féin.
And if you don't get the money, if the British government continue to say what they have said up to now, there is no more money, what will you do?
We are in problem solving mode here, Stephen. These problems can be solved. These problems in the run-up to the Stroman House Agreement were solved. And the DUP then went back on their word. We now need to see schemes developed to protect. I think we're close to it. I think the mood music is good. I think
really?
After this election...
The British government are going to give you the money?
I think after this election, we will see in place, we will see a welfare system that meets the needs
Where's
of local
the
people.
Evidence that the mood music is good from the British government?
Well, we know for... Take one thing, for example. We know that already the Labour and Lib Dem have already said that they're going to scrap the bedroom tax. So we know that there will be an evolving situation with welfare. And this is why it's very, very important. And these are red line issues for us. You know, we won't have a situation where children with disabilities, the long-term sick, large families and adults with severe disabilities, that we make savings on their backs. We have to make savings where we can make savings on those who can shoulder the most. It's not our needy in society.
Okay. Chris, thank you very much indeed for coming in this morning. Thank you.